Christoph Fahey, you are the CMO of Moonpig. Thank you very much for joining us for this second series on surviving or thriving through this pandemic, and really keen to talk to you about the last 12 months. You and I have known each other for quite a while, and again, you're one of these individuals that I've seen dance across various sectors, which I think is brilliant, and again talks to the perspective, no doubt, you've brought to Moonpig. You've worked in the media with the Telegraph. You worked in the gambling gaming sector with William Hill, Ladbrokes Coral. You worked at Hostelworld and beyond. But you have joined Moonpig in a fascinating time. I think about 2 years ago, June 2019, and we talk now in March 2021 about the last 12 months or so. Welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, so look, I'm Christoph, as you said. I'm the CMO at the wondrous Moonpig. And it's been a very, very interesting last 12 months and even 24 months. I think when I joined, no one could see what was coming, obviously. And I took the job because I think Moonpig is just one, it's an iconic kind of UK brand. And we are in this incredible, incredible position where it's the only business I've ever worked in where actually, when you say you work there, people sing the jingle at you, and which is quite funny. They don't kind of ask you questions about the business or anything. They just sort of say, "Oh, I know you, Moonpig," and they just literally sing the jingle. So it's very unique. And look, I took the role because we've got a really interesting new management team. Obviously, it was private equity owned then, and it just the growth trajectory and the sort of ambition of the team and the CEO were really strong, so it was a very attractive sort of proposition.
Now this is 2019 you joined, Christoph, and this is a business that was founded, I think, in 2000 by Nick Jenkins.
Yeah,
that many will of course know from, well, his success in being one of the most successful, quietly so I think as well, successful tech entrepreneurs this country's produced, but doesn't make a lot of noise. Of course, people know him from the Dragon's Den. And he's a charming guy. I've had the pleasure of meeting him on a few occasions. But this is a business that he set up almost 20 years ago, and yet still you're accelerating like mad, and the business would have broadened out. Why don't you first of all tell us a bit more about your remit today as CMO of Moonpig?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, I've got, I actually quite like it. We've got quite a kind of simple remit is the way to look at it. So I kind of have, you know, look, we've got partly, obviously, one of it is build and maintain our brand. We've, as you say, it's 20 years old. It's incredibly well known for the size of business it is. And it really is kind of market leader, category owner in terms of that kind of card space, online card space. So, but that obviously needs nourished and built and maintained, as all good marketeers know. So that's one part of the job. Second big part of the job is obviously new customer acquisition. So, you know, get the customers in. And then the third part of the job is obviously keep them and retain them, and kind of and move them to buy for us for more occasions, and to buy other things. So whether that's gifts or flowers, across the year. So really, I've got quite a, I quite like it actually. It's one of those roles which is quite defined. You have clear accountability for some key metrics, which is good because it keeps your kind of eyes on the ball and you keep very focused. And it's obviously clear within the wider business about what you kind of do and what you don't do. And I think that's really interesting.
And do you look after the Greetz business as well in the Netherlands?
No, so the Greetz is it's our sister business, but they have their own marketing team who operate there. Now, we obviously share lots of information because kind of what we found actually across both businesses is obviously some of the things that we've done, Greetz can use, and some of the things that they've done, they can use. And, you know, I've worked in enough big businesses that spend too much time talking about kind of like, you know, sharing information and setting up kind of big forums where lots of information is shared and the best practice and all those great words. We just kind of talk every week and we share stuff, and we, right. It's been really good. It's been a really helpful process. They're a smaller business than us, but they have been more focused on previously on gifts and flowers. So they've got lots of experience there. We've been much more of a card first business. So there's just been some really good learnings across the piece. So it's been good.
So, as you say, the business is known as a card business, a personalized card business, and there's a lot of fun in that personalization and empowering your customer to personalize and bespoke the gift and the experience that they're giving through the card. But I was looking today at the site again, and of course, you sell loads more than cards. I think It's public information. You floated very recently your FTSE 250 business, and I think you're expecting to double revenues this year. So you must be growing across categories. You sell cards, you sell flowers, you sell other gifts, including chocolate and champagne. And I see you're selling Lego.
We are selling Lego, so it's brilliant. I mean, I'm personally as a Lego fan, and I know this isn't on video, but I'm sure you can see some of the little Yoda Lego figure behind me. My son built that, not me. And so I'm a big fan of Lego, so I'm in. But yes, you're right. But I think what's interesting is on the cards piece, if I start there, is yes, we are known for personalized cards, but actually what we've made a big effort on over the last 2 years is to focus on having a much bigger and diverse range of cards, because actually we want, frankly, all occasions. We want people to start with us for whatever occasion they're buying for. And what we were finding is people had absolutely gone back to that kind of that bit that had been landed in people's heads almost 15 years ago, which was this is a personalized card. And that means photo upload. And that means a certain, whereas actually what we're saying is that we've got a card for every occasion, and we can personalize it from adding a name to adding a photo to adding a lots of photos to adding a very kind of sincere message to adding some a message that we can help you with. So that's really important for us. And then obviously as that business has grown, you're absolutely right. What we really are there to say is that, look, we actually want to be, and this is kind of our longer term vision, is we want to be a gifting companion. So it's where you start. So you go, great, I've got a card. And by the way, here's the kind of best gift for that card for that occasion, or here's flowers, or here's a multiple. And we really want to get into the business of putting those things together to provide that kind of ideal package for customers. So it's super simple to find what you want, super simple to attach it, and super simple to send it direct. And that's where we see kind of our growth trajectory coming from.
So I've got two quick succession questions for you here. We've just had Valentine's Day. We've just had Mother's Day. And I think I'm pretty good at remembering both, although my wife keeps reminding me that I've got to give her a present because she's the mother of my children and not just remembering my mother, which I've been pretty poor at in the past, but I got right this year. Two questions here for you, Christoph. The first is, who is your customer, and is it women and men equally? And secondly, how have people been over Valentine's and Mother's Day during these lockdowns and the stress of the pandemics? How have their buying habits changed from perhaps the previous years?
I think it's an interesting one. So I think on who is our customer is that we are proudly for everyone and very deliberately mass market. I want to ensure that anyone should feel and can feel and will feel that Moonpig has a product for them. So whether it's a value type positioning or a premium type positioning, I want that. We're deliberately mass market. I think that's really important to get across. In terms of kind of Mother's Day this year versus Mother's Day last year or Valentine's Day, I mean, I think what's interesting in Valentine's Day is one of the things we see is very interesting. It's just about the kind of the rise of what we call the rude card. So there's certainly a lot more interest than I think. We've had quite a lot of internal debates actually about, do we do rude? Is that Moonpig? How do we define it on a mass market site? So actually we don't, you know, your rude and my rude could be rather different. And we need to reflect that. But what's been amazing is we've seen a big rise in that. Obviously, given where we are with COVID, we've seen a big rise in kind of sales. Our flower business is grown dramatically. Our gift business has grown dramatically. And I think that's been really interesting. And of course, look, I mean, I think I'm jumping around a bit. Obviously, what COVID did through lockdown one is absolutely drive our business to change a huge amount incredibly quickly. Because, you know, when you're, the way I talk about it is when the high street closes down, people turn to the brands they trust. And back to your point earlier, we're a 15, 20 year old brand that people know for cards. So they go, cool, I'll just go to Moonpig because X, Y, and Z isn't happening. And, you know, in terms of sharing kind of, you know, a learning, it was, you know, we were a bit creaky at the beginning, right? Because no one saw it coming. Suddenly, you know, I'm in the office on a Tuesday and suddenly I'm looking at the kind of commercial director and we go, I don't think I'm coming in tomorrow, are you? And he's like, nah. And then from that, I haven't been back for a year. So we, you know, so obviously our business had to scale incredibly quickly to get there. And then if I look at what we did for Mother's Day this year, we did something like over 2 million cards on Mother's Day, which is incredible amount. And we're trying to look at some work about how many mums are there in the UK, and yeah. have we sent a card for every, you know, one in every five mums or something. So we can't quite get there yet, but that's something we're looking at. And we also sold like something like, I think it was around 4.5 million individual flower stems. So in terms of the scale of our business, we have been all the way through kind of the COVID, we've been constantly scaling to get to a point where actually we can get through a Mother's Day and we can make sure that people get the gift they expected, get the card they expected on time and to the right kind of quality that they're looking for. So it's been such an interesting journey over 12 months, because you go from a business that was scaled and ready, but suddenly you just saw that kind of wave of new customers come, sure. a wave of orders come, and you have to adapt and you have to rapidly change how you do things internally in order to meet that demand.
And more men or women shop on Moonpig?
It's, you go into the business and you think it's going to be more probably predominantly female to male, and actually we are very evenly matched across. It's really
excellent.
And I think again, it's that perception piece that people kind of go Moonpig equals kind of like a female brand. It's not. We're very, very well mixed across.
You're gender diverse. Excellent. That's
the right phrase, gender diverse.
Good.
So you've got better marketing terms than I have.
What then through this last 12 months or so has perhaps made you a better marketing leader or leader of people in the sphere of Moonpig?
It's a really interesting question. I mean, I think what I've loved is the pace at which we've been able to operate. Right. And it's been, you know, every marketeer or every business, in fact, every function in the business has a list of the things they would love to do if they were given the chance. And we certainly moved from a place of, I'd call it very ROI focused, kind of classic e-commerce sort of tech platform business where you're sitting there going, well, it's, you know, pound in, what do you get back, to a board that was where I felt conservative going to the board. It was an interesting piece of leadership change for me, because I'd normally go to the board and go, well, I want to do this, and they kind of knock you back a bit and try and put you here. At the time I was going, right, I think we see some opportunities. They go, I don't think you're pushing hard enough, Christoph. I think you need to do more. And I'm like, but we're doing loads. And so it was quite an interesting
very
interesting kind of, I called it like a topsy-turvy board where I felt like I was the one being kind of limited, if that makes sense. So that was really interesting. And the other thing, which was in terms of kind of, I suppose, leadership, was just putting your hands up and saying, I don't know how to do this any more than any of you do. So yeah. I don't have the magic answer, because I kept on saying to people, if I had the magic answer, I would literally probably be on a yacht in the Mediterranean, just doing a satellite. But I don't have the magic answer. So we are actually genuinely, and I don't mean this in a trite, we're actually in this together. And I need you to tell me when I'm pushing too hard, because all I see is opportunity, and I need, and vice versa. So I think the openness and the communication and the speed of communication we had as a team just was so much better. I think just because you're actually in it together, and there's less kind of hierarchy pushing down, going, hey, here are the numbers we're trying to hit. How are you doing? It was like, I don't know what tomorrow is going to bring, but let's go out and maximize the opportunity. And actually, I think it led to I'm a very trusting leader anyway. I believe in employing people and letting them do good work.
Yeah.
But it just meant we could push so much more responsibility and accountability out throughout the team.
How big is the team?
It's an incredible opportunity. So.
Sorry, Chris. How big is the team?
So we're up to about 30 now.
And that must have been hugely empowering then for individuals either, you know, died in the wool Moonpig for a while, or those who've been in the business for a short period of time.
Another really interesting thing from my perspective was we'd gone in, so kind of almost like the kind of board meeting before kind of COVID, I've gone into like, we're going to in-house performance. I think it's important. It's one of my, you know, I really wanted to do it. Now we had a kind of 12 month timescale for that. We did all of that within 3 months when COVID hit. We brought the team in totally in-house performance. And again, it was we've done that across so many different things. We've opened up more channels. We've done more. We've been on TV more. We've been on radio more. We've pushed into social. We've set up an app marketing department from scratch and pushed that through. I mean, there's literally, these are the things that if you kind of laid them out sequentially, would probably take 3 years. And we've actually just sort of done them in parallel. And I think the biggest learning from me is just that listening to the team and actually making sure that while I'm getting excited about all the opportunities, you know, that you are managing people's ability to actually deliver this, you know, because 30 people before we went in was a good sized team and coping. 30 people as we've gone through is a good sized team, but you know, sometimes on the end of a week was a kind of, you know, was pushing the boundaries of people's kind of ability. Yeah. I want to push, but and look, you know, we've all been in the same place, but you know, the kind of the work life balance got hard because you're sat at home and.
Yeah.
And so I think my kind of ultimate learning has just been trust, right? Just trust your team, get them to make the decisions, and then just have really strong lines of communication so people can just put their hands up and say, do you know what? I just need a day off, right? I know I'm not going anywhere, but I want to read a book or binge on Netflix. And,
absolutely.
And we just absolutely. Go, do you know what? Take it. It's honestly, don't answer your phone. I don't care. Please have the day, because actually you've probably worked.
Yeah, and actually, I've obviously been speaking to a lot of digital leaders across the consumer space that we operate in over the last couple of months, as we all have. And one of the things I'm very aware of that's come up more often than not is how if we used to have work and home, and we typically traveled and had that commute segment, if we're to swap that commute segment, should we not swap it for something meaningful that is ours, that we own, instead of being on the tube or the train? Where possible. So if there's going to be more flexible working and people will go back to offices, people choose to work a day or two at home, is probably the way things will pan out for most businesses. How can people use that middle world, that middle space, the third space in some people's vernacular, to do something different, I think? And if that's sleeping, that's great. And if that's playing ping pong, that's great. If that's learning another language, that's great. And if it's going for a bike ride, that's great. But I'm very, very keen to see the benefits of people not commuting and people doing something else with their time, which isn't more work or necessarily more family, because I think there's a wonderful opportunity to invest that time in something new and meaningful.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting perspective. And we've, that one of the things, and I'm sure lots of businesses are doing this, we've invested a lot more in development for teams. So we've set up a Moonpig University, for example, but it's not just about stuff that makes people at Moonpig better. It's about their own time and about their own interests and ensuring that we kind of capture that. So it's really interesting you said that. I think more businesses need to look at how they facilitate that. So there is that clean break from work time, but as you say, it's not just sort of it's not just swamped by something else, either moving later, as in work, family time, moving in towards it.
Yeah, it can't be more work or more washing.
No.
Christoph, one last question for you. Give us a sense. You've clearly achieved a lot. You've had to accelerate a huge amount in the last year or so. You've been lucky enough as a business to have positive opportunities, investment. You floated last month. What do the next 6-9 months look like? And anything else in the pipeline that will mean that Moonpig looks different, perhaps in a year or two's time, whether that's categories, markets, or proposition.
Yeah, I think we're definitely, one of our key things is to move from just cards into this gifting companion space. And that's not something you build overnight, but it's something that we absolutely are going to build out. So you'll see that both in our card range, but also in our gift range and our flower range, and you know, that piece of tying those things together and ensuring that customers can do that sort of super simply and really conveniently. So I think that's really important for us. I think we obviously want to keep driving growth. I mean, that's pretty kind of clear, and that's what we're here to do. And you know, from our perspective, we still see a huge share of the market that we are addressing is still, you know, on the high street. And you know, one of the most interesting things for us going forward, as in any kind of e-commerce business, is one, how much has consumer behavior actively changed? How much is moving from offline to online and will stay there, versus how much is still going to be there, and how we transfer that. So how much of our how many of our customers are going to return to previous patterns versus stick with us. And I think we are going to go through a, you know, subject to lockdown easing on the dates, that data not dates, as you know Bojo says, but subject is that going forward, it's going to be really interesting, I think, not just for us, but for a whole host of e-commerce businesses to see where they land. And I think actually making comments about what we're going to see over the next 6 to 9 months, I think we're going to be learning in the next six months to see then really, and to then make some more potentially more strategic decisions going on from there.
Now you hinted towards the high street, and perhaps you stopped before you talked any further about high street. And if I may, I'm absolutely fascinated, as I think most people are, about what it will look like from a consumer behaviour and experience perspective of those returning to high streets around the world in the future. And of course, a lot of what were shops selling things will be places in which you go and experience stuff. We know, I'm sure, that the likes of Dyson had an experience shop on Oxford Street opposite Selfridges, where you could try all their hair drying equipment, and I think Hoover's, but you could not buy a product there. It was an experience-led retail environment, but you couldn't shop there. I wonder whether the future of the high street will have more experience-led businesses where you'll be able to, you know, experience, you know, the array of products that Moonpig might one day sell, or not. But I think will be ripe opportunities for online businesses to look at a presence in the high street, no doubt.
Yeah, I think it's a great thing. And look, it hits a strong internal debate on the head, that point you make, because I think there's definitely a view in a good way that actually having some kind of experience piece where people can touch and feel our products and see how easy it is and all those good things is a good space to be. And I think there's a camp going, well, we make it so easy, why do we need to? And I think it's a really good healthy debate. And look, I'm, you know, as someone called me the weeks ago, I'm a seasoned marketeer, which I think is just short for old. And obviously I've worked across a bunch of retail businesses, and I can see how powerful they can be in the right, used in the right way, which I think is the point you're making. So you can tell which camp I'm in, but there's certainly a camp. But it's a good debate about how ultimately it's about how do we get more people to experience our product, and what's the best way of doing that. And I think it's what I call a good live debate.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, here's some free advice for you, Christoph. When I'm ever at an airport, I often think about writing or sending a card before I land in another country. And I always find it very difficult to find a card, a stamp and a postbox, but maybe there's an experience at an airport when we all get to return to airports, hopefully in the not too distant future.
I think I'd fight for the high street first, given that probably more that's hopefully a little bit more likely.
I'm sure you know a lot more than us.
I don't know anything. We are watching the dates and the announcements as closely as anyone else, I think.
Good. Absolutely. Well, listen, Chris, it's been great speaking. Thanks so much for your insights and perspective. All the best.
Cool. Thank you. Anytime.